to require people to have medication? Is it a good idea to have, you know, it easier to lock people up? What do you think of that?
In certain cases, if it's going to be a threat to themselves and other persons of harm.
Okay. I'd like to ask, put out here, I think there's a difference between being a danger to myself, which is my very own business, and a danger to the community, which is a social and civil concern and belongs absolutely. Society won't exist unless we manage some of the threats to it in some kind of way. But this is typically lumped together, and everybody talks about danger to self and others as if it were the same thing. It's absolutely not. I want to maintain my right to hurt myself. That is my business. I'm an adult. I'm competent. The state should have nothing to do with that. And my if I'm dangerous to my community, there are civil interventions that belong there. I don't think who appointed psychiatrists or medical doctors as the ones to decide whether I'm ordinary enough and normal enough to function in community or not.
You know, I've been reading, and I'd hoped to have a long show on this with George Cavallo, the patient inmates ombudsperson, who we failed to get together for a meeting, and I'm hoping we can reschedule that. We had a great show about a year ago, but there's this issue of what are called PACTs, P-A-C-T, which is, I guess, an acronym for, you got the, what that's
Program
called?
For Assertive Community Treatment, also known as, quote, and they say this, not me, hospital without walls, unquote.
These are this is needles on wheels, as I understand it. They run to your house with their psychiatrist, and if you haven't taken your meds, they try to talk you into it, or they take you back to the hospital. Isn't that the deal? And
you'll never see the word voluntary in any description of the assertive community treatment programs, and what studies have shown is that if you pay more attention to people in the community, if you help them and get them housing and get them jobs and provide social support,
wait a minute, that's socialism.
This works.
Hold it.
This works.
We have to cut you off now. So we don't allow that kind of talk here on the radio. You know, I mean, interesting, the word treatment, again, the reason I went in to talk to the ombuds people this week, I was still trying to make contact with George, and I hope he's listening, and I hope somebody gets word to him.
George Cavallo does a really good job and is very clear about these issues, so I do hope to get a chance to speak with
him. Yeah, he spoke very well about the actual local process of how he fights for the rights of people to refuse, you know, what I consider to be mind-numbing drugs, and also drugs that have incredible side effects, ranging from tardive dyskinesia to all kinds of others.
Some people, the medication is useful, but I don't think the issue should be only meds, never meds. The issue should be choice.
The issue
should be choice from a variety of options, including if you want medication, including if you want meditation. And even the Surgeon General's report on mental health, which just came out last week, talks about a choice from a variety of options.
I mean, this word treatment to me, I mean, it sounds like it's a cover word for profits by the pharmaceuticals.
Indeed.
And also, I mean...
And the whole behavioral health industry, right, which is huge.
I mean, it seems to me that, I mean, again, as I said, the reason I went to talk to the ombudsperson was to get some stats on the effectiveness of psychotropic drugs over the last, I mean, they've been experimenting with them for 30 or 40 years now.
Well, effectiveness for what? I mean, it absolutely zonks people out and controls them and manages them. So,
right,
effective from whose point of view?
Right, that's the question. In other words, no, what I'm saying is in the so-called condition of, quote, schizophrenia, quote, manic depressive affective disorders, whatever you want to call these fancy diagnoses, which some of us believe are mythical, others are, you know, they cause real pain. There's a lot of controversy there, but I mean, if you look at so-called physical ailments, you have studies done which show that some medications are effective in so many percentage of the cases, and some aren't. Surely there are similar stats, we just haven't seen them, maybe there's a reason we haven't seen them, that talk about what happens when you treat somebody with Thorazine for 10 years, you know, did their condition change? What you can tell is, you know, once, or are we just talking about keeping people, you know, asleep and staggering around like zombies? I mean, what are we talking about? We have, BJ wants to have a word on this. Go ahead, BJ.
The thing that you're saying about the medication for the Thorazine, Actually, I was on it for more than 10 years. I was on it ever since I was like about 15 years old up until about the age of 31.
Does it have any bad effects, or how are you doing on that?
Oh, man. I felt like I was a walking zombie. I had to do whatever I had to do just to stay awake. So I got tired of the Thorazine because it was so powerful. I was taking like about 200 milligrams twice a day, but I was taking it in splits.
Were you required to take it, or were you doing this because you thought it was a good thing?
No, I was prescribed to take it.
I mean, did they? Were you pressured to take it, or did you think it was a good idea to take it?
Well, I was been on Miller-Vril for years before that. Then some other company came in, and they actually changed the name of the medication, but still serves the same purpose.
But I mean, what was the problem? What from your perspective was it a good idea? I mean, as you look back on it now.
Well, I had problems with trouble sleeping and seeing and hearing things that weren't actually there.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I was on the medication. But then when I realized the medication was giving me problems, they put me on Cogentin that would take out
medication.
The side effect.
In the United Kingdom, there's a whole organization of people who are managing hearing voices and seeing things without medication or without much medication. It's called, I think, Hearing Voices, and it's a movement in the United Kingdom.
Sure.
So there are varieties of ways, again, choice, to deal with this. If you really want studies and stuff, the United States Surgeon General just came out with a report on mental health, and anybody can get a free executive summary at 1-800-877-9M-HEALTH, H-E-A-L-T-H.
It's also on
the internet. 1-800-877, I'm sorry, I'm saying the wrong number, aren't I? 1-877-9-M-H-E-A-L-T-H.
So it's one more time.
1-877-9-M-H-E-A-L-T-H. Also on the internet at surgeongeneral.gov.
And if anybody doesn't get these numbers or you have questions after the show, and we are got another hour left in the show, and this is on 96.3 FM. You're listening to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, Sylvia Karras, BJ, and Robert here on the line. You can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll give you these additional numbers. BJ, are you still hearing things? Are you still having problems? What's happening?
Oh, no, I'm off that medication now. I feel a little more better. And
now, is
more
that,
ease.
So can we conclude the medication cured you? Or that it was part of the problem, or is
I think it was part of the problem.
So why do you feel that you were hearing things before you went on the medication? They gave you the medication because you were hearing things.
Yeah.
Now, what's changed that you don't hear things now? In other words, is it because you've aged? You're in a different life situation.
Well, I had the experience to see what would happen if I didn't take the medication.
No, but I mean, let's say before you even started taking it, you were hearing things, right?
Well,
long ago.
Actually, I was in a runaway home at one time by the state.
Right.
I was abandoned by my mom.
Uh-huh.
And somehow, that's how I was able to get on the SSI benefits at that time.
Right.
And the state hooked me up for all these things that I never knew about.
Well, what I'm saying is, you had these things that were symptoms. You thought they were... You were hearing things you didn't want to hear. Is that accurate? Or
well, I guess when I was 15 years old, I really never had that problem. But they just sent me to these places just to, you know, have me evaluated.
Well, did you have the problem, or was it in their mind?
I think it was in their mind.
So are you saying that they?
So I guess I was
for
like
15 years.
So actually, I was kind of like a guinea pig for them.
Wow. So.
What BJ is talking about, that as many as 85% of people who end up with diagnoses and in the mental health system have a background of trauma, and often sexual abuse, early childhood abuse. So the family movement likes to portray this as biological, and certainly the pharmaceutical industry loves to portray all this as biological, but there's a social issue of social violence and family battering and those kinds of concerns that nobody looks at. We just have more and more victims of that kind of abuse pouring into the mental health system and getting medicated.
Well, you know, what I see it as, I'm concerned about civil rights for homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
I see this as a massive attack on the rights of homeless people, particularly There was a phrase in here that really alarmed me. I want to make sure I can find it in this article in the LA Times I read a few moments ago. This Thompson-Perata bill that's coming up, let's see, there are a couple of concerns I have. One is that it's going to allow people to hold people for twice as long a period of time. Right. And again, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, this idea that you're, if you want social control, okay, we got social control. Let's be honest about it. We don't want these weirdos walking around the streets muttering to themselves. We don't want guys like that, like old BJ here, who looks just like an ordinary person, clean cut, clean clothes. Even his fingernails are clean. This guy's cleaner than I am, that's for sure. You know, I mean, but there's a certain, you know, pristine image that cities now have, that they don't want the grubby folks, you know, particularly those without housing, hanging around the downtowns.
And the legislation, it doesn't say, I don't think, in what you read, also strikes the right to refuse medication. It totally strikes the Reese decision out of the law, so that once you're caught up in this, if they say meds, you take meds. So that's another way to keep people who aren't acceptable tranquilized or other or segregated or separated.
And what amazes me is that this, according to this, that there are only 12 others, we're only one of 12 states that don't have.
I told you it was a very well-funded campaign, and they've been working hard on this. The first step is that parity legislation will pay for all of this eventually, and Mrs. Gore was behind parity. I mean, this is very well orchestrated. You get parity, you get that assertive community treatment, you get the force in your house all in place, and there's huge amounts of money then pouring into this.
Well, it's sort of like what they did up in Seattle when they put out the no-sitting laws. They also had programs that increased, I don't know, homeless shelter and homeless funding to some extent, though nowhere near what was needed. It's kind of like the carrot and the stick. They tried the same thing in Berkeley. Berkeley luckily rejected the stick and took only the carrot. They took the funding and increasing social services, but said, screw the laws, the restrictions on basic civil rights and public spaces.
Unfortunately, the National Sheriff's Association has endorsed this legislation nationally, not just for California.
Well, I would think that, you know, unfortunately, law enforcement authorities are, you know, I mean, well, let's look at the problems have to do with things like, you know, you've got a population of alcohol abusers, you've got a but the alcohol abusers are not important unless they're visible. If they're visible, it's, of course, because there isn't housing available for people. There aren't really significant support systems, and so instead people are forced into the outside. So what I guess the fantasy here is that somehow this is a problem that can be fixed with, you know, with a certain kind of drugs.
And control.
I guess what they're going to do is they'll come to your grate. They'll come to your heating grate, and they'll force you to take your meds, and so you'll be kind of quiet all day like a lump of vegetable and as you sit there on the sidewalk.
The worst of all of this is if you object or if you say you don't need this, this is part of your illness then and proof that you need more and need to be controlled more. So the patient is caught in this extraordinary double bind, and nothing changes the social conditions that have created all of this.
And the social critics, of course, can be dismissed as lunatics.
Well, we're very paranoid, and that's used as a label, a negative thing, to think that there's a conspiracy behind this or anything. Helen Thompson is a former psychiatric nurse and probably brings that attitude towards this legislation.
Interesting. You know, I'm looking again at this law specifically, legislation would add, I mean, right now we have a situation under Landris Petrus Short that there is, oh, interesting, that there is a, take a look at this, there is, if you're, they can hold you for 72 hours in a 5150 if you are gravely disabled, a danger to yourself, or a danger to others.
And this is going to make that looser. It's going to say if you have a history of being any of those things, or if you're likely to be any of those things, and it's going to be on the word not of a 5150 official like maybe a psychiatrist, but of your loving family or your friends can say, oh, that person's in trouble and needs help. Whoops, into the bin, onto medication.
Well, the sinister thing is here is what does help mean? I mean, there are a lot of people who bought onto this train, who jumped on board this thing because they think, you know, they see people outside, they see the fact that there are no facilities for folks in terms of housing and even in terms of shelter. And they also see people who are acting in ways that seem to be, that indicate what, you know,
Well, you have
craziness
to,
in some way. I mean, our failure to be able to adapt to ordinary conditions, grave disabilities.
The Surgeon General says yes. The Surgeon General is saying that 1 in 5 Americans are mentally ill, fit in the diagnostic and statistical manual somewhere, and in any 1 year. And that's a terribly scary way of formulating society. It's really turning us into a lockstep conformist thing for the 80% and saying 20% is a huge number of people. You don't fit. You're not like me. Medicate you. Turn you into me.
BJ's got something to say about that.
Yeah.
This is past Monday. Well, actually, the week before this past Monday, I saw this group of people down over on Pacific at this one movie theater one day. And this one lady happens to be, I guess she's employed through the county health department, mental health place over on Emmeline Street. Mm-hmm. So she invited me to a Christmas party the past Saturday went by. So I went there. And she told me she would have information for me to try to get it so I can try to better myself to get into the program that they have to offer over there. So she didn't have the information on her at hand to call her first thing Monday morning at 9 a.m. She even wrote it down in her book planner.
Right.
So this past Monday morning, I called 3 different times. The only thing I get was an answer machine, but not her. So I said, the hell with this. I'm not going to call back. So
well, that's what people find when they call almost many of these social services.
DJ, would you have been willing to leave your name on an answering machine? Do you have a phone number where she could have called you back or not?
In a sense, yeah. In a sense, no.
Uh-huh.
BJ, feel free, you can take a message on the Huff line if you want. By the way, you can leave 423 Huff as your callback number if you're looking for a number for the moment.
There are some very good programs in the community that are not forced, that are voluntary programs, and that might be useful in terms of housing, in terms of food, in terms of health care. So it isn't all bad.
Well, see, I wasn't trying to do just that. I just wanted to try to get into some outpatient treatment, but if I did, they would have to understand my need.
Right.
I do not want to get on the medication.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to do something that I would feel more comfortable of doing, like going to outings, to movies, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Something that's recreational wise.
Right.
Well, you know, it seems to me then, BJ, and of course, it sounds like you, Sylvia, have a very clear position on this, but you don't want this current compulsory outpatient treatment, and you don't want PACTs.
Absolutely not. And most, there are a great many people against this. Interestingly, most mental health professionals are not supporting this. Generally, the county mental health directors are not supporting this. The protection and advocacy people are not supporting this. The legal people are not supporting this. So I repeat what I started with is, whose interest is this in? Who's going to benefit from this?
Well, you know, it's interesting if that's true. Why have 48 states, or I should say 38 states, already passed these?
Because there's a huge amount of money behind the lobbying to get this to happen. And one of the devices, and I am not making this up, is there is a database contained on the Internet with stories of violence in every state. And when there is another violent incident, the legislators in that state get sent all these violent stories and told, see, you must do this. There is research that is so skewed and so spun that any thinking person would reject it, but there aren't very many thinking people.
Well, looking again at this legislation that's coming up, what it's going to do is, apparently, it's going to vastly expand the criterion for holding people beyond 72 hours.
And remove their due process and civil rights.
And remove the Reese decision. And the Reese decision, you would like to summarize that for us.
The Reese decision gave people the right to refuse medication when they were in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Which, actually, it isn't working very well. I know a number of people, they can call it an emergency and medicate you anyway, right?
They can medicate you in the first 72 hours under emergency, and it may be too late after that to recover, but after that, you're supposed to have what's called a Reese hearing, and you're supposed to be able to refuse. And it really was in very important civil rights legislation.
Now, when I talked to George Cavallis, ombudsperson advocate locally, about the stats, I think he said that about 50% of Reese requests are granted. The other 50% get turned down. So it's not true that if you just say, I don't want to take this medication, you're able to say no.
Well,
you have to show it's an informed decision, right?
Well, yeah, I don't want to be cited as authority on the law.
Right.
It,
I don't have the details here, but we did go into that in some detail. But it's certainly better than having no protection.
Exactly.
Now, that's not a part of this article. You're pretty clear that they're going to be removing Reese protections with
it. Yes, the language is on the internet, the proposed language, and the whole Reese decision is just struck out in the legal markup.
Oh, excuse me. Can I put in for just a minute?
It's really scary to look at that.
Go ahead.
Have you ever heard of LII? It's a Legal Information Institute.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the internet. And that's how I get my information. I always carry that with me, so anytime a situation occurs, I just pull it out. I just pull the papers out and just use that for my information based on civil rights and discrimination, that which I have in my hand, I got off the internet.
Sure. Can I say that to people, BJ? Because I spend a lot of time on the internet, and I would love to just pass along what you just said, if it's okay with you.
Sure, go ahead.
So what's the site you use?
Well, this one here is up under LII, Legal Information Institute. It's http://www.law.cornell.edu/.
And taking a look at what you got here, it's Civil Rights and Discrimination, an overview. It's interesting stuff about one's rights in a number of areas, discrimination mostly. And it seems to me that if this, well, already there's a lot of discrimination against people who are labeled mentally ill, in society generally, in the mental health system particularly, and it seems like your rights are going to be cut way back if this Thompson-Pareda bill gets anywhere forward. Do you see where it's standing right now? Is there much? What's your assessment of its chances, Sylvia?
I'm very frightened, and I don't know. The people that I mostly know are pretty liberal and are against this, but Thompson keeps pushing forward. She's got extraordinary strategy. She keeps people out of the loop and has secret press conferences and all kinds of manipulation. She kept clients out of the hearing until they asked to make sure the door was unlocked. Somehow the California Institute of Mental Health held managed hearings about all of this that were very biased towards no dissension. I don't know what her powers are, and I don't know who's behind her. So I'm scared is what, and the Civil Rights Initiative passed in California. That was a horrible, horrible thing.
What was the Civil Rights Initiative?
Proposition something or other, which kind of deprived immigrants and undocumented.
Oh, 187, you mean?
Yeah.
It was turned back by the courts.
Right, exactly. But it passed, so right. Where the electorate is, who knows?
Right. Also, again, I remind people this bill apparently, if we can, you know, if you're accurate, removes the Reese decision, expands the time that they can hold people.
Doubles the time they can hold them.
Doubles the time they can hold them. It also apparently loosens the standard for conservatorships from beyond a reasonable doubt to clear and convincing evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I there was something else about homeless people. I'm looking for that. I swear I saw it in here before.
That I don't remember.
Republicans on homeless mentally ill.
But certainly the people behind these kinds of initiatives see homelessness as a sign and symptom of psychiatric disturbance.
Right, or alcoholism or drug abuse, and these are all considered to be then psychiatric disturbances.
Right.
So this idea for some sort of quick fix to get rid of all these
people,
instead of dealing with the realities of the real problems that are creating this,
or giving them some housing,
thank you very much. You know, we don't get that. Been talking to Sylvia Karras, and Sylvia, I want to get you to come back on the show with an update. We do a show twice a week here, 6 to 8 on Thursday evening, and of course 11 to 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. Would you be up for that?
Perhaps in a few weeks, this legislation has to leave the assembly by the end of January or it dies. So I will, I have your number, Robert, and I'll be in touch if I have something to say. And I also have your email address.
And I invite, of course, anyone to call in. And Sylvia, we'll try to get back to you if there are any questions which come in through the Huff line. 423 Huff is the number off here if you want to call, or if you want to get on air and talk about this issue as soon as Sylvia goes, the lines will be open at 427-3772.
Thank you for putting this on the air, Robert.
Hey, thank you for coming on the air,
Sylvia.
Bye-bye.
And looks like the phones are ringing.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Willow Simmons speaking.
Hey,
I've been following this with great attention, but this is good stuff. I mean, it's horrible stuff, but it's. I'm really glad you're bringing it up. I was going to actually call and say something about your conversation with Fred. I'll just say briefly that I think that the idea of a citizens' tribunal is so important on all these issues.
Mm-hmm.
To have that kind of solid base of people who are at least, even if looking at things from the point of view of real politic, which I do, which is that let's don't get idealistic about things, but to have a constant strong pressure from another group that's not bureaucratic or elected, I think is essential, you know, across section. But I wanted to just comment briefly because Sylvia is so much more researched and well-versed and knowledgeable about these things than I am, but I wanted to add my two cents about mental illness and just say that I worked for a year with in a local facility, and I went in there pretty skeptical to begin with, but then after I was there, I was so horrified about the use of meds for everything. And that I am a counselor for a living and done this for 20 years, and what I saw walking around there were not people who needed some kind of a drug, some kind of a something that just covered over the symptoms, which I think is really significant, but that they seemed to me people who were really suffering from post-traumatic stress, which is about the only diagnosis that I would go along with in the whole darn book, that their Bible, the DSM-4, that I think that's a valid thing. I think people have been traumatized and all kinds of forces, from family forces, social forces, their political, economic forces. And I think that's one issue that's really not talked about. And the other issue is that people, anybody who behaves out of what we've defined as the norm, that we have, and all cultures have it, they have an idea of how you're supposed to behave. And in this culture, if you don't behave in that way, that's pretty narrow, then there's something wrong with you. And that how we define what's wrong with you becomes really scary. Because what, you know, rather than just simply saying this person's in distress and how can we assist them with all the complexity, we know a lot of stuff about how to work with people besides giving them some kind of pill so that they will go away, so that they will, you know, stop bothering us, stop upsetting us because they're talking about things that we don't have access to, or they're having visions, or they're having terrible kinds of voices and visions that are horrible. Maybe they're from the past, maybe they're from the war, maybe they're, who knows, but that we just simply shut them up. And I want to just say this one last thing, because I think that language that the mental health profession uses is really significant. And the word that I heard over and over and over, I mean many times daily, was the word compliant. And what we were told is that we were not supposed to counsel. We were hired as counselors. We were not supposed to counsel or give therapy. I mean, this was our directive. We were only supposed to make sure that they were compliant, which meant they got up, they were good little boys and girls, they took their meds, they went to their activities, they made their bed, and that was all. And if you ever, which I did a few times, just overrule that law and try to attend to people in a compassionate way and let them cry and have them hear what they had to say, you were called on the carpet. And if anyone showed extreme emotion like healthy people should, they were considered, they were slipping, and it was a danger signal, and we should call their coordinator because something really was up, and they probably needed to increase their medication.
Well, stay on the line. Here's BJ. He wants to say a word.
What's your name?
Willow Simmons.
I got a question for you, if you don't mind me asking.
Sure, please. If I can.
If these people in the mental place, facilities claim to be so professional, then how is it that they keep using the same word of compliance and keep giving the example that the person is taking their meds, etc.? How is that being professional? That's just basic.
Well, you know what? I think, BJ, this is just my opinion, having looked at this for many, many years and having worked there that 1 year and working with people trying to help a healing process to happen, is that I think it's what Sylvia and Robert and you have all been talking about. I think it has to do with how to control. I mean, that's what compliance is compliance to our rules. And in that way, I think they're being very professional because that's what it's all about.
Just a shitty profession.
It's not really professional.
They're going to keep drugging you up. It's very much like the police force, you know, law and order. It's not about healing. It's not about discussion. It's not about exploration into many existing ways to work with people that, you know, have been tried and many good things have come out of it, or to honor the person and explore what they're suffering or whatever, or give them the option to suffer, as Sylvia said. But that it's about control. And that's what I think the society is so addicted to, if you will, or obsessed with.
Well, when
so
I was on,
I think they use that word.
Well, when I was on medication, I felt that the outpatient staff was trying to control me, but I had to prove them wrong, but I just didn't tell them until I got tired of it. Because they had this program where I was trying to get some kind of housing. And they would tell me what my problems were. And I got pissed off too much. I told the counselor straight off. I said, listen, I asked you if you can help me for housing, etc. Not, you know, me standing here, you telling me for me to listen to tell me what my problem is, because I know what my problem is. I didn't come to hear that. I just want to know if you can help me, you know. That's what I told my counselor. And I said, if I got to deal with this, I'm the hell with it.
Yeah,
so I walked out the door.
We get paid to dope you up, big boy. That's what they told you, probably. But not in those words. You know, Willow, I want to play devil's advocate here for
sure.
A minute. You know, the statement was made by both by you and Sylvia. Well, you know, 20% was some sort of attempt to make the 20% conform to the 80%. But surely we can agree that in some cases a 20% situation is bad, not because it's different than the other 80%, but because it has objectively, you know, bad characteristics. For example, 20% of the population is obese or really seriously overweight. I'm one of them. And I mean, I don't mind my weight. I think I'm fine. But it'd be nice if I could, you know, live longer and get rid of some of the extra pounds I have. And so it might be fair to say that, you know, people would like to be able to deal with that situation, and it is a problem. Similarly, people who are suffering or who are engaging in behaviors that, you know, they feel they can't control and they can't control themselves, want some answers to these questions.
Sure.
I guess the key here is, again, as Sylvia was saying, voluntariness.
Well, I think, you know, voluntariness is really important, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I had one thing that I don't even know if I disagree. It's more like a question in this debate, is that on the one hand, I would always say voluntary is just what seems right. But on the other hand, it's kind of like somehow it has a strange relationship to this business of Keith Sugar being a leader and not just letting things go on.
Yeah, don't forget to talk about that. I want to hear you talk about that, too.
But
that's Mayor Sugar to you, madam.
Right.
I don't know where he got the name from, though.
Yeah. Well, he's probably real sweet to somebody.
Yeah. To who?
I don't know. Maybe his wife or somebody.
His
but
friend.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
say that now.
On the issue of what you just said about freedom, a choice, I think that it's a really two-edged sword, because on the one hand, I think we must, it's so endemic, it's almost, I mean, it's so important, it's almost not even, I don't want to go into it. Freedom is so important and so foundational. But my experience And again, I want to say that I had that 1 year directly, and that's it. And I've never been in this position myself, and you know, incarcerated or whatever. But I feel like a lot of the people that I worked with, they made the choice on some level to get in that system, and to, not all of them, but some of them made the choice because they had no other information, and they kept getting the same information over and over, that this is all you have, this is the only alternative you have, and therefore if you don't do this, people would say that, you know, if you don't take these drugs, if you don't take your meds, in fact, it's interesting, I always call them drugs, but that was, you know, you're supposed to call them meds, if you don't take these drugs, that you will go down the tubes, you'll end up in jail, you'll end up in the hospital again. Nobody ever said, you know, there, you have a choice that you can either take these medications, and these are what we know, this is what we know about them, what they can do and what blah, 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 and we're not sure exactly what this
I'd like to have some stats on that,
you know,
real
mean,
stats.
Nobody that I worked with, and I'll just, you know, make that disclaimer, it's been my experience, nobody that I worked with knew what in the hell mental illness was. They hadn't a clue. They just simply used these kinds of cliches about, you know, chemical imbalance and whatever, and you have to take them, and whatever new drug came down the line, they would adopt that, and they simply told people that this was the answer, and nobody was given any kind of choice of what else might exist for their distress, because don't get me wrong, I mean, it was clear that people are in distress, and some of their behaviors come out of that distress. Some of their behaviors come out of their individuality.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the, and sometimes it's both. But
well,
I think
like
that's
some,
what concerns me.
I'd like to see some evidence that any particular series of psychiatric drugs leads to, you know, treatment successfully in the following number of cases. And I don't, maybe those stats are available. I just have never seen them. And it seems to me that, you know, instead you have this kind of ad hoc approach where they try one thing, they try another, they mix up social control and so forth. But let me, because our time is limited, let me move on, unless BJ, you have anything else you want to say about this? I'm going to move on to the next subject, which is the question of the current city council's silence and the failure of leadership at the mayoral level around the very issue of restoring civil rights to homeless people at a time of great crisis because of the violence. That's more than 30 to 50 beatings in the last year, 5 deaths in the last 3 months, shelter for less than 20% of the people, and a mayor who won't even bring up the issue at city council until, I guess, if we believe Fred Geiger, he has the votes. What's your sense on that?
Well, I'm going to be real honest here. I've decided that it's time for me to be real honest, whether I'm on the radio or the city council or whatever. I talked to Fred this morning before he spoke with you, just thanking him. He's my landlord. Just thanking him for a lovely little Christmas gift he and Susan gave me. So we started to talk about this business, and he had seen me on the, you know, channel for the city council meeting, and said something like, oh, well, that was really strong or something, you know. And I said, yeah, you know, I was really not too happy. And he said, he instructed me about something that I didn't know about, and it was that Keith and Chris had really tried to push this thing through at a certain point, and they didn't, you know, they didn't get the votes and whatever. Well, I didn't know about that piece of it. So I said, I mean, I go along with whatever information I get, and I try to be generous about it. So I said, oh, my God, I didn't realize that. Maybe I should write them a letter and at least say, I still feel the same way, but I just want to apologize. I didn't have that piece of information, and I want to thank you for supporting it. And then, okay, hold on.
Go ahead.
Then I heard this program, which Fred invited me to hear, and I'm really glad he did. And from the discussion now, I completely agree that, you know, we can't do that. You can't, this is kind of what I wanted to say to them the other night, which I did. You can't do this. You have to stand up for, you know, what are you doing here if you came in here with strong values? What are you doing if you're not standing behind them? And I completely agree that, you know, in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to have leaders telling us what's real. But we don't have an ideal world. We have a world where people think all they can do is take medication when they're distressed. We have a world where people buy the Sentinel, which I think everybody knows is owned by the Wall Street Journal and Dow Chemical, and we believe that, and that we need people who are informed in places of leadership to take the leadership role and to speak up and to put their head on the guillotine or the axe, you know, if need be.
Apropos of which, I encourage everybody listening to call 420-5020, where you can reach Keith Sugar by phone. You'll get a message, leave a message that you want him to call a special session to put the Homeless Issue Task Force's unanimous recommendation on the agenda. That's the $10,000 commission that the City Council set up to give them the expertise to deal with this winter, the thing that they refuse to have any discussion about, either on December 14th or in November or in October or in September, at any time. And now we're supposed to wait until January. I'm sorry, I think they need a special session of City Council. I encourage people to call 420-5020 and do it now. Go to a phone and just say, it's time to put this issue on the agenda, have a special session. I'm sorry, well, I interrupted you, but
I only want to say one more thing and then I want to leave it open for anybody else, but I just want to add that, you know, I know that I get criticized sometimes for being too rash, and I think that I didn't used to be quite, I was always outspoken, but I don't think it was quite this rash, whatever you want
to
call it.
It's not very rash to me.
We don't have time to put things on the table, everything. I mean, we are in a condition now where things are accelerating that I think we really don't have time to play these little political bureaucratic games that have led us into this, and we have to wake up and take back the night and take back the day.
You're here.
You know, and everything in it, and claim it, and stop pretending that Daddy and Mommy will make it right for us. Because that's exactly what they want. Thank you.
Thanks, Willow.
And BG, I think you wanted to say something about that. Our lines are open, 427-3772.
Well, I had a question for you, actually.
Go ahead.
Have you ever seen that movie, John Carpenter's Vampires?
I believe so.
Well, look at the part that was in the movie when the young priest with the glasses. I mean, to get the issues for the city mayor or council or whatever to have a special meeting or whatever you want to call it, use this kind of like the same theory the way they played the part in the movie when they had to use this old building. And like it was like an old jail. They only had two stakes left.
You think if we staked out the mayor, he might?
No. I'm trying to get to the point.
Okay.
One person had to drive the Jeep, which had like a cable to pull out the vampires, because you know how vampires are. You burn them in when the sun is out.
Right.
So the sun was out, so they only had two stakes left in the cable. So they had to use somebody for the bait.
And so
they used the priest for the bait, because the guy that was running the show that lured the vampires out.
So how do you suggest we do with the city council now? What's the analogy? Show me the...
Use something for bait. Something for him to fall for.
$100,000 soft campaign money, perhaps?
No.
I don't
use
know.
The same theory, like drawing out the vampires to get their attention, to make them come to you.
Well, if anybody has any ideas on how we can bait these guys into coming forward, I don't know. I mean, you see, to me, it's a matter almost of...
I have one idea.
Go ahead.
But I have to take care of my manly duties first, but then I'll come right back to you with that.
All right. So we're here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're presented with a unique option here. You can... get in touch with us here at 427-3772. You can call City Council at 420-5020. That's their 24-hour message line. And tell them time for a special session before January to put the issue of their own Homeless Issues Task Force's emergency resolution before the City Council. The City Council may refuse to do anything about it, but at least the public can hear about it. At least we can know why we spent $10,000, or why we're spending $10,000 on this Homeless Issues Task Force without having it muzzled by the mayor. Now, the claim that he doesn't have the votes is not the issue. The issue is, will the issue be presented and will it be discussed? He may lose the vote. That's honorable once you have the issue out. But if you don't even get the issue out, if you leave it locked up while people are freezing, while people are getting beaten, while people are being falsely arrested and having their rights taken away, there's no honor to that. And I'm sorry, Fred Geiger, I'm sorry, a year ago, one vote in December and another vote in March does not constitute leadership by Keith Sugar, particularly when he's mayor.
He's mayor now. He has the power to set the agenda. He has the power unilaterally to declare a special session. He doesn't need anybody else's permission. It's true, nobody else may show up. Well, then let him hold a press conference. Let him stand up and speak to the media and say, yes, I thought this issue was important enough to call a special session. No, Catherine Byers was too busy in her red Jag visiting relatives to show up. Now, Tim Fitzmaurice was too busy buying $50 worth of food for the 100 people who could get to the armory to come down and deal with this situation. By the way, I thank Fitzmaurice for doing that. But, you know, I don't thank him, and I don't thank Crone, and I don't thank anybody in that council for maintaining the silence that they did after Willow Simmons and others spoke at the oral communications period at the last Tuesday City Council meeting and were met with silence, including their own Homeless Issues Task Force. And I might add that that council meeting had a very interesting process. The oral communications period was twice extended for business people to talk, and the only two people who were not allowed to talk were myself and the homeless man, Dan Hopkins. Those people didn't want us to talk because they knew what we were going to talk about. We were going to hold him to account the way I am holding Sugar and the council to account on the air right now. BJ, you have something you want to say? Oh, sorry, incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
How you doing? Am I on?
You are on.
My name's Philip, and I've worked in the mental health and with the homeless for a couple years, and I don't know any other solution other than giving some of these people medication.
Mm-hmm. You mean giving them medication or forcing them to take medication?
Well, we've never forced anybody that I've ever seen. If they want to remain in the system, they have to be med compliant. That is true.
Well, this is all about forcing people to take medication. In other words, it's about when they hold you on 5150s and 5250s that you have to take medication. And also, it's about putting people into... We're talking about the new Peralta-Thompson legislation coming up in January.
I have not read that. I'd be interested to read it.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's an article, if you're interested, in the LA Times on December 16th. I haven't seen it covered in the local papers, but if you go to the library, I think the library does have the LA Times, and check that out.
If you have somebody in the jail system who's completely manic, have you ever been around someone who's manic?
I've been pretty manic myself one time or another.